All right, boom, there we go, and we're live. Bill Protzman, appreciate it, man. We have spoke, it's been like 3 years since the last time we spoke, and the last time we talked was in detail about music, so I reached out to you again because I was going through an experiment of my own, and I wrote you because I wanted to get your insight on it. But, you know, let's start off here with who you are and what your background is for the new listeners that might not know who you are.
Hey, sure, Jay. I'm so glad you reached out. So Bill Protzman, I'm the founder of Musimorphic, which is a form of self-care. I mean, audiences appreciate these things in different ways, but it is absolutely a foundational kind of self-care that works at the root of everything that you may be doing. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because, you know, music is vibration, everything vibrates. So getting that part of it right is just so exciting. Yeah. Been at this for a while, professionally for about 30 years. Lots of research out there. I'm not a music therapist, although music therapy is another way that this shows up. If you're interested in a one-to-one therapeutic relationship, find a music therapist. They'll help guide you. If you're interested in self-care, learning to do this on your own, reliably, works every time, I'm your man.
Yeah, so you mentioned vibrations, and we'll get into that because I have a whole thing written about the vibrations. I mean, our body's made out of what, 65% water? And then let's get into it. Have you seen the experiments where like there'll be a faucet running with water, or there'll be sand on a table, and then someone will unleash this frequency, this vibration, whether it's music or just like some banging on the ground, but then you start to see these different patterns take shape in the liquid or in the sand. So yep. What does that mean that it's doing to our body? To
isn't that cool?
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. There's so much, I mean, obviously, that vibrates in our universe, almost everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the exception of whatever's in a vacuum. Exactly. So these things where we can make different kinds of substances vibrate in different beautiful ways, ways that we perceive as beautiful or synchronous or in some other way, artistic, right? There's an elegance about them, are such an invitation because, you know, to make the big leap there, the idea is, hey, why would we want to vibrate in any way that's not beautiful?
Right.
And while you can, there's so much research on this. There was a great movie probably 20 years ago called What the Bleep Do We Know, where the scientist in Japan that was working with ice crystals and vibration was able to influence the way that ice crystals formed with thought alone.
Thought?
Yeah, just thoughts, just thinking about these ice crystals with a what we would call a good thought, like love, joy, peace, caused them to form in ways that were beautiful. And then thinking about other things that are not so beautiful cause the crystals to be kind of really crazy. I kind of hesitate to bring this up, though, because every time I do, someone says, well, you know, they played heavy metal music as ice crystals were forming, and the crystals were sort of just, they weren't beautiful. And that means that heavy metal is bad, right? I don't think it can go there. But there's certainly ways of being able to mirror the effect of dissonance that are different from mirroring the effect of consonants. That is, you know, when things vibrate and they sound good, they also kind of look good. But when things vibrate and they don't sound good, very subjective, the result isn't so good. In any case, there are many things that you can do in the world that are quite beautiful using vibration. And of course, many things you can do that aren't. The Nobel Peace Prize was awarded last week, right, to the survivors of Hiroshima. And if there's any kind of vibration that is not good, it's the explosion of anything. You know, that is a very dissonant kind of sound and also a dissonant use of vibration. So you can get the idea. Somewhere in between those two things, we want to find health and happiness and joy, and let's look for vibrations that help us do that.
When you're able to change patterns just simply by thinking of something positive or by something negatively, isn't that telepathic in a sense?
No, I suppose it could be. I'm no expert on that stuff, but I do know that, you get better results when what you want is powerfully aligned with who you are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It sure does. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like none of us want to be unhappy and discordant. But a lot of
it's
us.
It's almost like things start going correctly when you're on the right path.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that. You know, we do practices. I'll just sort of lump them all together. Whether practices mean prayer for you or worship or meditation or whatever the practices might be, working out, we do these practices to keep us in alignment with what we want.
It's so fascinating because, okay, here's a story. Me and my friend, we were under the influence of LSD.
Beautiful.
Last year. It really was. And so just because when you're speaking about, you're able to change the mood or the shape of something by your thought. Okay, so we were actually doing this experiment because whenever I would, like I was able to communicate non-verbally with my friend, but like right. almost shooting energy out of me. So he would turn around and walk maybe like 20 feet into the distance. And he wouldn't know when I was going to send this charge. I don't even know what to call it, but it was energy. And it feels like an orgasm almost, like you're shaking, you're vibrating, like all that. And I was able to do this under my own power, like whenever I wanted to, and then shoot it toward him. And sure enough, like right when I did it, I would see him start to shiver too.
Isn't that cool?
It so for me, there's definitely a different way to communicate. There is a different way to feel. Like we don't have all of the answers, you know, there's still something out there that is undefined in my mind.
Lots of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was intense.
Yeah. That, I don't know. It's psychic, I guess, but that sensitivity to energy that's beyond the normal day to day is such a beautiful field to play in.
Yes.
It's just so beautiful. And what you were experiencing there, using LSD, I've experienced using magic mushrooms, psilocybin.
Yeah.
I've also experienced it using music. It's the same experience, man.
Have you gone, like, when you go to concerts, there is something that you cannot capture just by putting on headphones and being in your room. Like, there is an energy, an aura. When you physically go to a concert and people just dispersing this beautiful music and it hits you, and I don't know if it's the music on top of being with a crowd and you're all on the same wavelength, I don't know if it takes all of that to be there. Like, would you get the same sensation if it was just you solo, but then the artists as well playing a concert for you in a solo setting like that? Or do you think you would have to have multiple people all grouped in?
It happens both ways. And if you practice, it can happen under headphones too, but that isn't quite the same as being in the concert. And the concert where you're able to share that with everybody else who's in the stadium or the room, that's such a beautiful sort of amplification of the effects that we want.
There, you get like this, because when someone walks into a room, you can feel the energy change, right? You can feel the energy change from whether it's negative or positive.
Right.
Something to that, huh?
There's definitely something to that. And you can tell even before, if you're going to a concert, you can tell even before one sound is made, whether or not you're in the presence of someone who's able to convey a superior energy. I really hate to use comparison here, but you're getting the idea. And that presence, I think, is what we call it. At least my world is making music on stage. When you have presence or stage presence, sometimes they'll say, that's a mastery that very few actually have. Lots of people can be good enough to get on stage and even rock an entire stadium full of people into a crazy, beautiful state. But you can tell if presence is there because those who have it do that from the moment they step into the room.
Yeah, who do you on the top of your mind? What kind
everybody
of
everybody knows like the Dalai Lama has presence like that. Right?
For sure.
It's like dudes like that, right? But I went to a concert here. Turned out it was a symphony concert. Mm-hmm. Famous violin player who has been dealing with various levels of disablement for his entire career was playing the concerto that night. I forget what it was. But obviously this is an individual who's had much acclaim in his life, is respected in so many different musical genres. And when he walked into the room, like onto the stage, everybody stood up and clapped. And he was walking with crutches, so it took him a while to get to his chair. Nobody stopped clapping. It was honoring that presence.
Mm.
You know?
Wow. Yeah. Do you think music can heal?
Oh, golly. You need to ask the question. It's been healing for millennia. Absolutely. Yeah, completely.
Yeah. What kind of ways have you seen personally?
I have personally. You can watch, anybody can turn on YouTube and watch this. One of the most remarkable ways that music is healing these days is in memory care. And you don't have to be a music therapist to do this. In fact, I would encourage everybody, regardless of your age or whether or not you have any memory issues, mm-hmm. to make a playlist and share that with your friends and family. Because if you, for whatever reason, found yourself in a coma or unable to communicate, everyone could still get through to you with the music you love.
Bill, and, I wrote this down. I'm not even kidding. I put music is time travel, and I wanted to discuss exactly what you just brought up, because if I'm having trouble thinking of a particular time in the past, what I do, what my exercise is I will see what year that I'm trying to think of, and then I'll go to a playlist and I'll find music that was around that era.
Yeah,
right. And then
I'll
put on the music, and all of a sudden it's almost like it's a key to this file that was in my head, and it unlocks that drawer, and now I'm able to navigate and move through these memories simply because of music.
Yep. Yeah, science supports that. You know, the music that it's actually our hearing. Our hearing is the most sort of root connected sense that we have. Lose your sight, use your taste, whatever, you'll still be able to hear. Even in a coma, you can hear.
That's crazy.
So, hey, be careful of that next time you're in a room with someone who's passing away.
Careful what
they can hear you. Right? But you can use that. You know, and you've pointed out just one of the beautiful ways that you can use that to reconnect yourself with those fundamental things. I mean, that part of your memory, dementia, Alzheimer's can't touch it.
Yeah.
So playing that music
offers
that connection to
that's powerful,
the person who needs it, right?
Dementia can't touch it.
Dementia can't touch
Alzheimer's
it.
Alzheimer's can't touch it.
This is, we're talking like lizard brain, brainstem stuff, amygdala stuff. It's deep inside.
Yeah, I'm curious to why do you think that is so deep within us? Why is that in our DNA?
That's a beautiful question. I'm not qualified to answer it, but I just love that it's there, Jay.
Right.
You know, we can rely on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, it goes back to, I mean, Jesus, way before our ancestors, you know, but it's...
Yeah.
What was before our ancestors?
Like, exactly. I mean, where did this awareness come from?
Yeah. Why are you able to get goosebumps when you hear a song?
Right. Audibly, you know, just audible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I suspect, no research on this yet, but I suspect that we have other sort of awareness that's connected mm-hmm. that deeply as well. And you mentioned it earlier, like when somebody walks into a room and you just kind of sense the energy change, those sensors, whatever they are not audible. They're not five senses stuff, but we're
right.
equipped with them.
Exactly.
And music is like a gateway to be able to get there.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can't really see it. You can't touch, taste, or smell it, but you know it's happening somehow. You know, something about us has picked up on it.
Yeah. And sometimes drugs can be almost like a supplement to put you on that vibration, or almost in like that dimension to where now you have the tools to interact with it.
Right. Right. I know the neuroscientists will say, well, you know, psychedelics interfere with our default mode network.
Stop,
and that's actually,
my buzz.
You know, it's not bad. It's not a bad thing. We grow up, we learn to think a certain way. We don't mm-hmm. deviate too much. That's our zone of safety. But if we can put that aside with something, and psychedelics do a good job of turning it off for a while,
yeah,
we open ourselves up to other kinds of perceptions and can connect more easily, I think, with those other senses or other awarenesses that we have. Unity consciousness, there's names for it, you know?
Right.
Is it spiritual? Yeah, it might be. But it's certainly something that's beyond the norm.
Yeah. Do you think it's missing from our, I don't know, like, do you think music should be more prominent in schools, I guess? Almost like a, because it seems tribal. Like, I know, like, way back when in our ancestries, like, probably it was tribal. Like, you know, you'd have ceremonies.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone would, at the end of the day, you know, you'd have a fire and you would just join and love and tell stories and have music on in the background. It was just like this warm feeling, you know, and this connectiveness. And do you think that's missing from our society today?
Oh, is it ever?
Yeah.
So much.
Uh-huh.
I think Taylor Swift's last concert tour is a great example of the hunger that we have to join together as a community around music. And hopefully it's also helped some people understand that that's something that we need. You know, we really need that sense of community. Because communities that we've built that are not that are not so great. I mean, look at the evidence.
Right.
You know, we've been at this a while now, I mean, since the age of reason, I guess. And that was kind of the moment in history where music lost its magic and started its long, slow slide to where we are today, where it isn't even like, you know, a subject in school anymore. But it ought to be. There's just so many reasons why keeping music as an integral part of everyday life, like a purposeful integral part, not, you know, a spectator sport, but something that you're using. Mm-hmm. There are cultures in the world that do that all the time. You got to go to Africa probably to find them. But there are cultures in Africa where the historian is a musician,
yeah,
where everything that happens during the day takes place to music. And the after day, you know, where everybody comes together in the evening is supported by music.
Mm-hmm.
Such beautiful things.
It is.
And technology has kind of taken us away from that. Age of Reason has said, no, we got to understand it scientifically before we can use it for anything important.
Right.
Give me a break.
Sure, why not? Some of my favorite videos on YouTube is, like, say there's like three black guys and they're rapping, playing music, like on a corner by a store, and all of a sudden, like, this one white dude walks by and he just joins right on in, and now they're all like, you know, like, honest to God, I think music can kill racism. 100%, dude. Like, nothing is on their mind besides making beautiful music, and they're all on the same wavelength, and it's like, oh my God, man. All right, we're feeling each other. Yeah, that's wonderful what you're doing with that drum. Oh my God, that's so sick what you just said with those words. It's like, you know?
Yeah, I do.
And those are my favorite videos to watch.
You know, one of the things I get to do is, like, it's a real life version of that. I lead a public sing-along once a month here in Balboa Park. And during the basketball season, which has sort of just ended, the municipal gym is next door. So all these families show up with their kids. And for like 3 months, these little kids would show up. These were like little black dudes, man. And they were like between maybe about 5 and 11 or so. And man, they break dance as we're singing. They sing along. They ask for songs and sing with them. They are just in it. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I grew up playing classical piano, right? And I missed all of that. I wanted that. I didn't have that in my musical background. I had, like, alone on a stage with a grand piano. And what I wanted was a bunch of people just having fun doing what they do. So that's what the sing-along is, right? We get together, we sing, right?
Oh, that's cool.
That's all it takes. But you get the feeling.
Yeah.
That feeling that you're watching on these YouTube videos, that's the feeling that we get. Crazy.
Yeah, and even the people in the comments are, like, rejoiced by it as well.
Right.
Everybody wins.
Let's see more of this.
Right, let's see more of this. Stop showing me people getting in fights on my algorithm, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the division. Stop showing me that. Show me more of the love and community.
Show me the love and community. And you know, it doesn't sell because it doesn't create controversy.
I hate that so much. Yeah, I hate it. I hate that that's a thing. It doesn't sell because it doesn't. There's no controversy over it.
Why does the good stuff have to be so unattractive by the technology that we're using to supposedly support our pursuit of the good stuff?
Beautifully. Yeah, beautifully said.
Hello.
Yeah.
This is not even artificial intelligence. This is artificial stupidity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, geez, the way you said it like that was perfectly articulated. And then that kind of has me going down a path. I also have a question about, do you think like some music is a psyop?
Oh man. Okay. This is a great question. Can you like elaborate on that? Like,
yeah, with an example? Just like, let's say some brainless, no substance to the music played for the masses, you know, it gets green lit to go on to commercial radio.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You can just tell that there's no substance behind the music. It's almost like dumbing down a little bit.
Oh, here you use the words.
Yeah.
I feel that our efforts in the artificial intelligence space are just a huge attempt to dumb it all down. Artificial intelligence is not good for outliers. It never sees them. And mm-hmm. So if you've come up with something new, it's not something that artificial intelligence really knows what to do with.
Oh man, you're hitting right on a lot of points. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? So, yeah, artificial intelligence is great for making music. You can do all kinds of things with artificial intelligence in the creative space, except the human touch, like the genius, the brilliance, the thing that makes the melody actually work, mm-hmm. whatever it is, that art, right? That doesn't exist in artificial intelligence yet. I mean, hopefully they're working on it, right? But it's really the domain of human beings to, I don't want to say this, control or manipulate aren't the right words, but to use that aspect of music. Well, otherwise it's a manipulation. And hey, let's face it, even when I'm on stage playing music for people, there's a manipulation going on, you know, because I'm leading people down an emotional journey.
Yes.
That they wouldn't otherwise take. And sometimes there's resistance, and that's fine. But, you know, it's a human being doing that. I think that you've pointed out the reason that this works and why people can tell the difference between AI music and real music. It's being in the room, you know, it's having that human component that goes along with it. And hey, you know what? AI music is fine. It's for commercial purposes or what, you know, sell something with it. It's easy to just sit down and even today you can say, hey, here's my lyrics. Here's my chord chart. I want it to sound like this band. Make me a song. And it does. And that's fascinating and it's novel and all that. But does it heal? I don't know. Probably heals some people, you know. I'm not going to complain about
that. What about the creator, though? Like the creator, I feel, gets a lot of healing themselves, but they have to go through those trials and tribulations in order to make beautiful music. Some of the most hurt souls make the most beautiful music. And unfortunately, you have to go through that. You can't just put in keywords of what you are feeling and then rely on AI to create you a beautiful piece. Like it just won't. How could it know?
Well
you've
said.
Been through?
Well said. And you know, it's all derivative. It's, you know, it's based on what's come before. And if your job as an artist is to explore beyond what's come before,
right?
That's not sort of like figuring out how to make a new chord or to reassemble someone's notes in a new way. That's like tossing the whole thing and starting over in a new domain that has never existed or sounded that way before, you know?
Yeah.
I often wonder if we're at the end of what is it doable with music. And every time I get there, I just open up Spotify and somebody like Jacob Collier will come along and do all the crazy stuff that he's doing. And, you know, microtones are a thing. And in cultures that aren't Western, the music that sounds weird to us is far beyond our ability to comprehend harmony because they can comprehend harmonies microtonally, right? And that works in that culture in a way that's far different than it works to hear, you know, 12 notes put together in some way over here in the West. This is just one of those ways that let me say this a different way, Jay. When AI takes over and does all the humdrum necessary stuff that needs to be done, what's going to be left? What's going to set us apart?
You know, yeah.
It's our humanity that's going to set us apart. And if you haven't studied the humanities, I mean, God bless you. We need MBAs and doctors and physicians, all that. But you haven't studied the humanities.
Right.
When the time comes, you're going to be high and dry without a place to hang your hat.
100%.
Because you won't know what love feels like. You won't know what joy feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And worse yet, you won't know how to express it unless you've felt it.
Oof.
Right.
Yeah.
And at that Taylor Swift concert, if you don't know how to express joy and you're there, well, you're going to feel like an outlier.
For sure. Totally. Yeah. You're going to be like, humanity, what's going on? What is this?
Humanity is what will be left when AI takes over, right? So we better get good at it. And by getting good at it, you know, that supports musicians and artists and people who are in the humanities, writers and whatever, people who are actually creating literature, not just cranking off, you know, their latest bestseller. It's a summary of all the other research in that particular line of thought up till now. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sounding cynical.
No, I mean, it is, you're saying what it is, you know, and if it's cynical, then so be it. But we're having a conversation to get out in front of it to understand what could possibly happen.
Sure. Yeah. Contrast helps point the way.
Sure. Sure. When I was just thinking back when you were speaking about, like, music is, in some instances, a lot of instances, music is more than just music. Talking about slaves when they were working, you know, almost 24 hours, like it literally kept them going together. They would join and sing while they worked these horrific, horrific, laborious jobs, you know? And music got them through. It was powerful. It brought them enlightenment. And that was the only thing that kept them going. And that says a lot. That says so much about what music is. Music is just not just, that's where I kind of fall into the AI where I don't like it making music, just because you're getting rid of soul. What is soul?
There you go.
I don't know exactly what soul is, but I know that those, if you're a slave and you're singing and that's keeping you going, that is soul to me. That is what soul is.
That's
something
right.
deep within you. Yep. Yeah.
I think that's the thing that ultimately is attractive about music and why people can hear the difference or feel. Maybe it's not a hearing thing. Maybe it's a feeling thing. But we do, you know, we do that all the time. I've got family members who love hip hop and, you know, I can appreciate hip hop. I'm not in love with it the way some family members are.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally cool, man. That's working for them. And something else works for me, right?
Right.
And at the core of it all, we both know what it feels like to love our music, to really love our music. Different kind of music, same feeling.
Yeah, and music's a very sensitive thing, huh?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so many people have no idea what it's doing. Don't have to. You know, you don't have to have the inner workings of your car all down to be able to get in and drive to the store.
Right.
But if you're really curious about that stuff and you want to, like, give your car a tune-up, or you want to replace the engine, or you want to, you know, get an electric vehicle and figure out how you can tweak that thing, or, you know, someday maybe Tesla will let us hack some of their software. You know, but if you want to get to that level, it's a much different experience, right? It's still the car. You're still going to the store. But, you know, wow. Once you've made it your own,
yeah,
it's a whole different feeling than driving a rental car, you know.
And I'll tell you what, Bill, this is where that experiment comes into play. So I appreciate the layup.
Sure.
Yeah, so for the last couple of years, I've found myself being stressed out, a little bit more anxious, a little bit more hostile, but not, I wouldn't act on the hostility, but I was just more kind of like defensive, I guess. Like, my first thoughts were always, well, if this person comes at me, I can take them, or you know, something like along those lines, more aggressive.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
Yeah. And it was, I was listening to the majority, like 90%, 90-95% of the music I was listening to was rap, like real hard rap and hip hop.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
and
perfect.
I'm like, okay, So let's make a change here. Because every now and again, I would dabble into some techno music and, you know, some rock, some yacht rock. And that was the other 5% of what I was listening to. So I'm like, okay, so what if we do a complete 180 and I start to phase out rap and hip hop and I start to, you know, add in some country music, add in some opera, add in some, you know, Hans Zimmerman, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did that. And I did this for a span of about 2 years just to kind of see where my mental space was, where if I was becoming more clarity, if I would stop being aggressive and those initial thoughts were like, okay, yeah, I could defend myself if this person comes up to me. And ultimately, it had a magnificent shift on my thought process and my overall feeling. It's incredible. So now mostly what I listen to is country music, like good time country music.
Yeah, yeah.
And sprinkled in with some upbeat techno music. You know, if I'm working out, sure, I'll put on hip hop and rap, but I only use that as like a tool before I'm doing something more aggressive, like before a hockey game or before my workouts. And what I've noticed is just this complete shift. And it got me thinking to when I was in high school, and this is 2002, rap was starting to emerge as the mainstream. It was taking over rock.
Yeah.
And it was like this giant wave that I was, I don't know if I'm proud to say, but I was one of the first ones that was listening to rap in my high school hallways. You know, I was dressing like I was Eminem, and I would write poetry and music throughout the day for years and years just because it took a hold over me. I loved it. I loved rap so much.
Beautiful.
But now that I look back at it, and now that I have a kid of my own, I'm trying to help him navigate his life as well. But I really do think that, now I sound old as hell, but if you listen to that and it becomes a part of you, like, I think you're going to have more tendencies to be more aggressive. It's just, do you think I'm onto something with this?
Interesting observation. It depends on your level of awareness. And the first thing I would say is that your level of awareness has shifted.
Completely.
I'm not saying I'm not putting any judgment on that. I'm just saying it's shifted. And music is a great sort of test environment where you can play with your level of awareness that way and try out emotion and see how they fit. Like, there's emotion in hip hop that is absolutely essential, and it's given maybe millions of people a way to experience what some call negative emotions, but in a positive way.
Mm.
You get to feel it in your body. You don't have to go out and, you know, break things and hurt people.
Right.
You can feel that stuff in a way that is very real and also very safe. When I go to hip hop, I'm going there because I need to let some steam off, you know? I need to be angry in a safe way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that's a certain, within hip hop, there's like 100 different kinds of hip hop too.
Sure.
So there's some hip hop that's very tender and beautiful. And, you know, you can go there too. Musical genres are a great thing because they've exploded all over the place. They're all crossed over and things. But the general tenor of what people think of as rap and hip hop, it's high adrenaline, heavy beat, got that in EDM too, but usually words that are angry or that have a tinge of some violence in them.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe in music. Music's been used like that for a long time. However, once you decide that you've sort of played it out and you need something else, then you add something else in your diet, as you did, right?
Right.
And found some satisfaction there. And now you have like a couple of different ways that you can use music.
Yeah.
Right? That's the awareness that goes along with growing up, I think. I hate to put it in such simple terms, but it seems to me like I was that way too when I was a kid. I was one way, then I was another way, then blah, 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 you know, and I can see my awareness of music shifting over the course of my life. And all of it's still available to me. I can always go back, you know, when I need to play ragtime, I've got that available. When I need to play classical music, I've got that available. But there's a purpose to having a broad musical diet.
Yeah.
Right? And not being all stuck on one thing. It's not bad, but as your awareness changes, your awareness of the kinds of music that support you as you've changed also changes. Why is this so critical? Oh, it's amazingly important because there's very few things that work on us mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually or consciously, if you can use that word. And music does all four. So just because you're working out and listening to Chopin, it doesn't mean you're messing it up, right? It just right. means that's right. your particular flavor of consciousness and that you need that flow and continuity and all the other things that come in Chopin for that particular exercise that you're doing versus jogging or hitting the treadmill, which might be a different kind of energy, right? And the ability to quickly choose what you need is all part of the, well, we used to call it musical appreciation, but that's all part of the self-care that comes from music. Lining you up mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually or consciously for the task at hand.
It's so interesting that there are different genres that hit for each activity that you want to do. It's almost it's almost like it's tailored for a human being. It's so strange because when I'm going into, I take ice baths quite frequently.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I have a playlist strictly for my ice bath, and it Perfect. Feels the best when I'm listening to that sort of music, that type of music, like meditation music.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. It's, and then right when I get out of that, right when I get out of the ice bath, it's time to pump it up a little bit. So then I get like the, some upbeat techno music going. So when I'm in the ice tub, it's like low, mellow meditation music, and it feels just so right and so good. And I can clear my thoughts and everything is just fading away, all the stressors. And then right when I get out, after I dunk my head, right when I step out of that ice bath, it's like, all right, time to go. Let's get jazzed up. And there's music for that. There's music for everything.
Oh, yeah. And the beauty of it all is that, you know, your music is going to be entirely different than mine in the same exact same circumstance.
That's correct. You're right. Yeah.
And hey, you're going to be excited about some stuff you want to share with me. I'm going to be excited. I want to share with you. It's like, hey, have you tried this, Jay? Blah, blah, blah. And then we get into that, that incredible conversation that is more about listening than it is about talking, right? Because you're going to say, hey, you got to hear this thing, Bill. And then we sit down and 5 minutes later, we've heard it. And then the conversation becomes informed by everything that we just experienced rather than just what we're thinking.
Wow. Yeah. What do you feel about the, have you ever seen those concerts where it's not music playing at you, but you wear headphones and everyone's wearing the same headphones? So
I teach a class with that every week. We use the silent disco equipment, basically. Yeah, it's great.
Is it the same as being at a concert? I'm just curious to know the ins and outs, if you have any information on that.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, the music could be the same. I mean, you could listen to a Taylor Swift song on the headphones.
Yeah.
But obviously, she's not in the room.
Right.
And we're missing, you know, 90,000 people. So the experience of it, for someone who's been to a Taylor Swift concert, heard the song in person, is going to be different than me, who hasn't been to the concert, heard the same song in person. But that's okay, because it's the same music. And the excitement and the energy that someone who's been and heard it live brings to that listening experience, even under headphones, is infectious. You can feel that in the room, even though what you're hearing is like isolated to your own headphones and isolated to theirs.
Right.
You can feel that energy in the room. Wow. And that's a marvelous thing, you know, excitement or whatever. It comes through. It just comes through.
That's awesome.
Like we're all little resonators. And like you mentioned at the beginning, we're probably like vibrating in a particular way that makes us line up beautifully. If you could take a microscopic view of our entire system at that moment.
I would love to see that. What happens at certain frequencies with our bodies and our minds under certain music.
Yeah.
They don't have anything like that that you know of?
Well, I can say it's anecdotal.
Of course.
The thing that is so cool to me about frequencies is the same thing that's so cool about musical preferences. Like you like certain genres and I like others. What we need is something that we seek. It's like we have this little built-in radar that can detect the kinds of music that we want. And in that, in those particular kinds of music, music shares the same frequencies, basically. It's how they're played that makes a difference. You know, you could be listening to Eminem, who raps in, let's just say E minor, for want of a better, just arbitrarily. E minor has this amazing 40 hertz low tone in it they've found is actually pretty good at preventing the buildup of plaque in the brain. So 40 hertz tends to be a useful tool, right? Well, it doesn't matter that Eminem is rapping at 40 hertz, or if you went and heard some symphony that's in the key of E minor. What your preference is doesn't matter so much. What your frequency is doesn't matter so much. What matters is that you've identified something that works for you.
Yeah.
Right? And hey, support that, right? Because whatever that is, and this goes beyond belief. So if you're listening to this and you believe that 40 hertz is a good thing, great, that's fine. But it goes way beyond belief because remember, it's mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. The emotional is way beyond the mental, right? And the physical, what it does to you, it's way beyond what you think it's going to do to you. And the spiritual is way beyond all of that, right? So there's things going on that we don't even know yet. But if a genre does it for you in one way, it's doing it for you in all four ways.
Yeah.
Right? And I can't sit here and say that, you know, you shouldn't ever use that genre because it's blah, blah, blah. No. Use the genre that works for you.
Yeah.
And if listening to a 40 hertz tone with nothing else around it is your gig, then that's cool too, right?
I mean, damn, it's just like some people like spicy food and some people don't.
That's right.
Right. Everyone is different. I mean, it sounds so easy when you say it, but now that we like got into the nitty gritty of it, into the weeds, it really makes sense.
Oh, it's totally cool. Sense.
Yeah.
And, 40 hertz is a sound that's all around us all the time. Isolating it down, that's fine. You want to do that? No problems. But it's the rest of the music that really makes it work, right?
Yeah.
And 40 hertz is like, whoa, it's just kind of boring, right? Now, if you're a monk with 1,000 other monks chanting the Om at 40 hertz, not so boring.
Right.
For the rest of us listening to you, that might not be as engaging an experience. But hey, you know, use it in the way that you want. And, you know, I'm going to get flack for this. Because, you know, solfeggio tones are out there and there's monofrequency people all over the place and the chakras all have their specific frequency and that's fine, right? I'm down with that. But it's the music that moves us, not the frequency. Got your crystals all lined up at 40 hertz? Great, we're going to blow that away now because we're going to play 80 hertz.
right.
Oops, what happened? Ah,
oh, no. You'll pay for that.
I know, and but it's the combination of it. Hey, if we could all just slow down and, you know, put on a single frequency and all come into communion with that frequency. Wow, man, that would be so cool. But that's not the world we live in. The world we live in has that frequency and our beautiful alignment and moment and that communion. And then Taylor Swift plays the next note. And we all have to align with that note and the next note and the next note. This stuff is happening so fast in a concert. You don't even have to think about it. You can just be in it.
And it's almost like a type of hypnosis.
Exact. Like, took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
It's the flow.
Yeah, it's the flow.
Jump in the flow.
What do you think it takes for our world to get on one wavelength?
One frequency?
Yeah, one frequency. Exactly.
Oh, I'm going to leave that question for smarter minds than me.
What would you like to see?
Well, my particular thing is one at a time. Like when you've seen something amazing or heard something amazing, you've got to share it with somebody, like one friend. Mm. And that one-to-one is really how things happen. A lot of wisdom literature on this. It's not just me. I'd love to change the world, but if it doesn't happen one person at a time, it's not going to change.
That's very wise, especially in this era right now where a lot of individuals want to create something that goes viral. And if it doesn't get that 500,000 views right away, then what's the point of doing it? But you got to stop thinking like that. If you help one person, that one person tells another person, let it be like that. That's fine. That's okay too. You don't have to go viral and start a forest fire right away.
Yeah.
Help one person.
In some cases, I mean, maybe we shouldn't. The Western approach that we have right now to preventing suicide, there's a noble endeavor. Can't prevent suicide, but we can create awareness of what causes people to feel suicidal, and we can fix that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, you're taking that and looking at it differently, as probably it should. Yeah, you can't prevent suicide. That was wonderfully said. Nice.
It's close to my heart right now.
Yeah, that was great. Why is that?
Oh, I do a lot of work volunteering with veterans, and over the last 15 years or so in San Diego, where I live, all the nonprofits and agencies and everybody, mom and pops, whoever wants to help veterans, have coalesced together and sort of kind of organized around a safety net for veterans. Mm-hmm. Now, there's way more than a safety net, because obviously what we want to do is keep people from falling into the place where they need a safety net.
Right.
But suicide is a part of that. You know, we've been talking about 11 veterans a day commit suicide, and that number, even when it was first published, is way low. And my son is a captain in Marine Corps Reserves. Actually, he got a promotion, but we can't say that yet.
Nice. Well, captain, congratulations.
Thank you. Awesome. One of his Marines was feeling suicidal, and there was some intervention that was necessary. And this guy was taken to the VA hospital here in San Diego, mm-hmm. and they refused to admit him.
Oh, come on.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's public. My kids posted this on X. It's out there. People know.
Yep.
There was a problem. The system failed. But why would the system fail when we've put all so much effort behind it for so long? You know, so I don't take it personally, but it feels like, oh my gosh, you know, we've built this whole infrastructure and safety net, and we've been talking about prevention of suicide and just blah, 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 this whole thing, right, for a long time.
Yeah.
And when it came right down to it, you know, this is the one that got away. Now, I should say, because I want to make sure everybody knows, the guy's okay. He was admitted to another hospital, not a military hospital. He's admitted to another hospital, and he's in care. So, that part of the system worked, but you know, the rules were that he was supposed to go to the VA, and the VA turned him down.
That's bizarre. And that's I hate hearing that.
That's why it's close to my heart.
Yeah, my dad's was a Marine as well, so Semper Fi. I understand the VA, and I'd hate hearing that. Turned him away, like someone that really needs help, like needs it the most.
Yeah,
you just nope. Turn
emergency
away.
Room. I mean, people in the emergency room are smart. They know what's going down, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So not complaining, but I just feel this. I was like, it's heavy on my heart, Jay, because we built this system to be better than that.
So when you have a heavy heart, what kind of music do you turn to? Like what the last couple of weeks, maybe, what have you been listening to?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So in the last couple of weeks, my uncle passed away.
I'm sorry.
Very, very quickly. I have another friend who's going into hospice.
Oh my God.
The last couple of weeks in particular have been very difficult for me. So I've been doing a lot of grieving, and I have music that helps me grieve.
Yeah.
There was a time in my life where I wanted to take my own life. And on that evening, I put on a particular piece of music by Rachmaninoff, because I'm a classical pianist, among other things. And this piece of music had been meaningful to me for such a long time in my life that I turned to it to allow myself to grieve, to give myself the space to grieve. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean grieving. Yes, you cry, right, when you grieve. But mental, you think all of the grief thoughts. You think of yourself ending at the end of your life. The mental component of that is part of the grieving. The emotions, of course, are part of the grieving. You feel the heaviness and the sadness and the loss and all of that. Physically is where, have you ever had that sort of convulsing cry where you can't stop and it shakes your whole body? You're just weeping like that? That was me that evening with this music. Wow. But the amazing spiritual part of it too was like a bath. It was like washing away all of that.
That's a detox.
Energy that needed to go.
Yeah.
And releasing all of me being wise, releasing all of me for something new. And the thing that it released me to do was to recommit to what I now call Musimorphic, to help other people to wow. understand that music works this way, you know, and open up the potential for healing and transformation that doesn't come in any other way than through music. So I can share that with you if you want to post it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But it's a Rachmaninoff here for people, for the eggheads out there like me. It's Rachmaninoff Etude Tableau, Opus 39, a number 2 in A minor. There we go. Ask. That's our classical music geek out for the day.
I want to say thank you for opening up and sharing that. That's
oh, sure, really brother. Cool. Absolutely. Yeah. This is it's fundamental that we all share these kinds of stories, and I'm happy to. This is a safe place. Yeah. I trust you and trust your audience to do the right thing.
Yeah, my cousin, he's been going through a hard time too with addiction, and he's told me multiple times that he wants to end it multiple yeah. times over the last couple of years. And he came to me the other month, and he's like, how do you stay so happy? How are you happy all the time? Because he knows that my life hasn't been very simple. You know, I've had mm-hmm. a lot of shit that I went through, you know, just tons of stuff. And he's like, how do you get by? And it's almost what you just told me right there, Bill. I told him, I'm like, I give myself the allowance of letting myself be sad. I have a sad day. Everything on that day that I am sad, if I wake up sad, every song I'm playing is going to match that. I'm going to be sad. I'm going to play sad music. That. I'm going to watch sad movies. I'm just going to let myself get rid of all of this. And I allow myself that.
There you go.
And then the next day, I'll feel pretty cleansed. I'll feel good. Like it got out of it. It got out of me. It's not in
that's
me. It's not stuck.
That's huge. The fact you know that, that's huge.
Yeah.
And going there. So when you're suicidal, if you're listening to this right now and feeling that way, you can go there on your own. It's much better if you can go there with somebody and invite them in to that kind of music and while you're feeling that right now. It just makes it safer. You don't have to say anything. Just say, hey, you know, to your wife or whatever, please sit down with me for a minute. I want to listen to some music with you. I need you here.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That's the communication. Communication and surrounding yourself with people that you know have your best interest. Having a close group or even just your family is fine, but these people, you've got to have trust in them. You have to surround yourself with good people. I cannot stress that enough. I can't. It's so important to making it out, you know, to finishing this race. That's what I call it. Yeah. You got to surround yourself with good people.
You can't do it alone.
No.
I tried for a long time, and hey, here we are in the land of individuality, right?
Totally. Totally.
But even in the land of individuality, you want to grow a business? Good luck doing that on your own. You're going to need some help.
Right. There's nice people out there too. I mean, not everyone's out there to try and get you, you know?
True. Well said. There are opportunists. Artificial intelligence probably being the biggest one right now.
For sure.
And hey, I got no problems with that. ChatGPT-4 is saved me on a whole bunch of like, oh my gosh, I got to get this copy done by, you know,
yeah, right,
15 minutes from now.
Yeah. There's use cases for it. There's proper use cases for it.
And I'll tell you what, you know, this is crazy, Jay. Music is always for human beings, but copy, text, ChatGPT-4, that's always for machines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not writing my copy for you to read. Right, yeah, I'd write it much differently if I was writing
a podcast with robots, you know?
Right. And by the way, you know, this is actually Bill Perotsman, the human organism.
All right. This is Jay Baroni as well, just to clarify.
Just in case. No artificial intelligence was used in the creation of this particular
no
sound that I'm making.
Shenanigans going
right
on. Yeah. Well, hey, Bill, let's wrap this up, man. I appreciate you. It's been a long time since we spoke. It's always refreshing talking to you. I love the fact that I just hit you up. You're like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it in a couple of days, and you jumped on. You talked to me. We got through some things. This was meaningful for me, and I hope for a lot of listeners out there as well. So thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Oh my gosh, thank you for, you know, firing it up, sharing your story, circling back. It's always great to find out how, you know, music has changed someone that I've spoken to a couple of years ago, and now look where you are, right?
Right. Amazing. True.
Very cool.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Everyone listening, thanks for tuning in. Go put on a good song. You know, doesn't matter what I like, doesn't matter what Bill likes, matters what you like. Go turn on something and, you know, go cleanse yourself, all right? Appreciate you guys listening. Peace.
Welcome to the Curiosity Chamber.